The RPGBot.podcast would like to welcome our new sponsor, Ezoic. Ezoic enables digital publishers to earn more money at every level and provides added features as customers grow. The company uses AI technology to optimize sites for the best possible results in terms of ad revenue and UI. Whether you're just starting out or a seasoned publisher with over 10 million monthly visits, Ezoic has customers of every size and skill level. Ezoic also provides industry-first perks based on publisher growth and performance, including expert support, SEO audits, access to free webinars and new products, and tons of exciting giveaways and events throughout the year. Sign up for free today and see why Ezoic has the largest community of high-earning digital publishers. To try Ezoic for yourself, visit rpgbot.net/ezoic. That's rpgbot.net/EZOIC. Today's episode with Devin Chulik is sponsored by Audible. Audible is the world's largest provider of spoken word audio, including some of our favorite audiobooks like Sly Flourish's Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master by Michael Shea. To sign up for a free trial and to get a free audiobook, visit audibletrial.com/rpgbot.
Welcome to the RPGBot.news. I'm Randall James, and with me is Tyler Kamstra.
Hi, everybody.
And Ash Eli.
Hey, guys.
And today we have a special guest with us, Devin Chulik.
Hey, everyone. My name's Devin. I'm one of the co-founders of Start Playing, the number one place to find games, groups, and game masters.
Awesome, awesome. Tyler, what is happening?
Well, today we brought Devin Chulik on to talk to us a little bit about being a professional dungeon master, or game master, depending on what game you're playing. So my understanding is, Devin, you've done this for a fairly long time, and you're one of the biggest names in the professional GM space. So you're kind of an expert on the subject, especially since you run startplaying.games. So we brought you on so we can kind of pick your brain about like how this all works, what the state of the world is, and where things are going.
First, let's just start with the fact that I am flattered that you have considered me one of the biggest names in the space. Oh my goodness. I have to make a call to my mother and tell her, like, listen, you thought this was all a fool's dream. Who's the fool now, Mom? Here's the thing. I don't think of it like that, but I do think that I saw that people want to play this game, and it came together very easily for me. And I'm really excited to chat with y'all, and I'm really excited to talk about like what it's like to be a pro game master and how other people can do it and what it means and how to do it really well.
So before we step into your game mastering history, what is your history with TTRPGs?
Okay, so all right, we gotta go back to my mom again. The very first experience was actually a choose your own adventure book that had a dice component, and I was like 4 years old, and I saw this book in a bookstore, and I was like, I want this. And I was like, you don't know how to read most of this. And it was like before kindergarten, the book looked so cool. I think there was like a barbarian on it fighting an orc. And she read it, and I got to roll the dice. And that was my first experience of like role playing, right? And then I'm older, I'm like 12, I'm at the game store, and I see these like people around a table and playing this game. And I'm like buying like a Spider-Man comic. I go over, what are you playing? And I just hear the game happening. I'm like, this, I need this. And I played one game at the game store, and afterwards I immediately bought the Dungeon Master's Guide. I didn't even buy the Player's Guide. I was like, I need to create the world and do this part. I knew immediately that I want to be a dungeon master.
Okay, what edition was this?
Third. So 3.5 hadn't come out yet. Third was out. Third had like just come out, I think.
Okay. Awesome, awesome. You're in good company then.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never had to do ThoughtCo. So
cross your fingers it doesn't come back in 5.5 or 6. It's like, why is everybody going to the exit doors? We were just getting started. The game, it's the way it's meant to be played.
Here's the thing. If Wizards doesn't release something like Unearthed Arcana on April 1st next year with ThoughtCo as it, like, they've missed a huge opportunity, because that's just like the biggest troll.
Everybody's going to see this year's
this year's April Fool's joke was that they were going to release Spelljammer this year.
Yeah. Now, that's such a good troll.
Right? But it turned out to be real.
Yeah. So. That's why it's so good.
It was a very good troll.
Okay.
Here's the thing, isn't real.
These days, you know, April Fool's is just soft launches for any product, right? It's like, we made this crazy sandwich. And they're like, oh, everyone really liked it. Well, guess what? We actually did. You know, like, the April Fool's is just a soft launch for any wild idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
If you have a terrible good idea sitting at home, like, that's the perfect time to test the waters.
Yeah, right.
you get people excited twice. Once for like, oh, they announced it, and then they realize, oh, it's April Fool's, and then they confirm it. They're like, you guys are heroes. You're actually doing it.
I'm still waiting for the KFC game console to be a real thing.
Oh, God.
The bucket. And it heated your chicken, too, right? Like, that was a great news. Like, think about that energy efficiency. Yeah. I need to play Skyrim for the 50th time just so I can get this chicken hot. So, speaking of which, so you played the game, you became a DM. Tell us about becoming a professional DM.
Yeah.
That's a good segue, right?
Yeah. You know, I was running tons of games. Wheel 5e came out, and I remember I ran a game for some friends, and I really got back into it. And I got back into it hard. And I was running like at least one game a week for new people. I was already running a weekly game with some friends, but I was just constantly doing like, you know, learn to play games with just anyone, all of my friends. You know, I'm really popular, so that was a lot of friends. So it got to the point where then I was running games for friends of friends, because like, you know, I had gone through all my friends and they were bringing their friends. And then someone's like, oh my gosh, my office would love this. If you like, could we like hire you to come and run this? And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That got me started thinking. And I was like, I wonder if the other people would be. And so that planted the seed. And so I went and I made a website over a weekend. And within 2 weeks, I was one of the top, I was the first result in San Francisco for hire a game master, hire a dungeon master. And then before you knew it, I had a booking within a week after that. And then a week later, I had another booking. And within the first 2 months, I had 5 bookings. And I was like, oh, this is actually a lot. And I was like, I'm going to start turning some of this down. I was like, it's going to actually be twice as much. Like, that's fine. And I was like, all right, it's San Francisco. There's a lot of tech money. So I just kept saying yes to things. And before I knew it, I was actually like hiring other game masters to run games because like I didn't have the time. I had my full-time job. I was just moonlighting doing this. I was running it for companies. It was so many games happening. And one of the investors of Start Playing, and he was a client. And he asked me before I had started this, hey, I need a game master in Chicago. Do you know anyone? And I was like, wow, I don't. That's kind of a problem. I want to fix that. And that's was the seed of thought that, you know, eventually grew into Start Playing.
Okay, I want to go back a moment. So you said you started bringing people on to be game masters represented through the company. I have to ask, what is that interview like?
So there was no interview. Okay. Oh my goodness.
What is that conversation like? It's like, hey, have you ever done this before? I own the books.
Yeah, it's like I knew other game masters who like ran like after school programs. So you know, this one game master, he runs after school program for at risk youth, LGBTQ plus youth. And I was like, oh, you're great with kids. Do you want to run this kids game? I have very low patience for children. And he's like, I would love to. And so that happened. And then, you know, another game master that I knew that I've played with just around, I was like, hey, do you want to do a corporate game? And I kind of walked him through the basics. And so this is before I even started playing. This is when I was just kind of doing it just out of my namesake. And people loved it. And if you have a few folks that really enjoy storytelling, it's just a little bit of customer service on top of that. And that's really what started the whole process.
So you mentioned that you were offered a gig for a group of kids, but didn't really want to take it. So what kind of groups do you typically DM for? Do you DM mostly for adults, veterans, new players to D&D? Like, what's your typical demographic?
Yeah, so here I don't run games for anyone anymore, except you know, like my friends on Sunday. You know, I run one game a week and with my homies because I spend so much time trying to make sure other GMs have games to run. But my favorite is always people that are new to the game. That's always my favorite. The reason being is I love the light switch moment, the light bulb moment, where someone gets that like D&D is not linear and that they really can do anything, and then they realize like oh, and you just can see it on their face, and then like I stand up on the bar and I challenge him to a duel, and you're like and you get so stoked that they get it, and then they're diving head in and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna meet you right there. And that is exciting. That is that when people realize that they can play, you know, even though like you're not a kid anymore. And when we're kids, we play, right? That's the thing we do. We make up rules. I have a laser shield. Well, I have a lava gun. And we do this, but now we created physics and rules for it. And we play because you don't use your imagination with other adults outside of work. You might use your imagination to solve a problem in the office, but you never like sit down and actually play when you're usually an adult. And D&D and tabletop are one of the few things that allow us to do that. It's one of the few things that allow us to actually use our imagination together.
I'll also say, usually my work solutions don't involve lava pistols, so still some deficiency in the workplace. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely.
So that progression, like those first couple of games that you ran versus when things really got going and you were in your groove,
yeah,
like how did the game change? What are the things that you learned as you transitioned from being a game master,
yeah,
to a professional game master?
You know, like you end up with a checklist. You end up with like really figuring out like the best way to onboard people. That's a great example. Like onboarding people to a game is very, very like everyone here, we've all played board games, right? We've all had that moment of like, do I really want to play this board game? When you get out the rules, all the pieces, and you're like, oh, this looks like a burden. But when someone's played it before and they start walking you through, they set everything up, and they say, don't worry about the rules, we'll just you'll learn as we play. You're like, oh. And it removes the burden. It removes the onboarding. You ever make a character for a system you don't know? That's a nightmare.
Yeah.
You know? But if someone gives you a pre-gen, it's so much easier to play because you don't have to like focus on creating a character on a game that you've never even played before. So I started realizing what are all the sticking points for people and what get people confused. And I made it, I've probably introduced over 500 people to the hobby myself.
Wow.
Just running games for new people. And that was so rewarding to like, you know, see how many people just like got so excited about it, and it made it easy for them to get started so they could just start playing.
So did you have regular customers like that you would run long-term campaigns for, or were they mostly like one shots that you would do just like one time for groups?
I had, I would probably say around 30% of my clientele were repeat, and the other 70% were like, hey, we've always wanted to learn this. We want to do a big event. And a lot of people like, we want to play, we think we know how to play this game, but we'd like to have a pro, and then, you know, we could do it afterwards. So it's like, sometimes it's like teaching people like what does a DM look like, a GM look like?
No, that makes really good sense. Okay. I have one more question to kind of poke at the structure of this. And then I have other questions. Do you put a size limit on a party? You talked about corporate events. In my workplace, my boss is occasionally brought up. It's like, it'd be awesome. Like, you should all teach us how to play. And it's like, There's like 12 of us at minimum, no matter how you chop it. And that's a nightmare.
You know, a lot of times, I mean, like I remember I ran like a 10 person bachelor party once. That was, but they all had a good time. Yeah, you know, because here's the thing, you know, at a certain point, you're like, I'm going to throw out a lot of the rules. I'm not going to get too caught up. We're here to have fun, so let's keep it fast. But, you know, like any good GM, you kind of like, you read the room, you realize like, let's go ahead and tweak some things to make sure everyone's having a good time. You know, if you're good at reading people, you make a great, you know, pro GM, because you kind of understand what people are looking for and what they want out of the night. And if it's a bachelor party, it's like, cool, let's just make sure everyone has a great time. If it's an ongoing campaign, like, okay, let's make sure like people get what they want out of this. These days though, with Start Playing, we do a lot of corporate events, and we usually tell all of our clients, you know, you should have 5 to 6 people, per group. But all our GMs, they write original content for all our corporate games. So, you know, you get someone like, I can't say their name, but, you know, it rhymes with Boogle. and they're like, hey, we have 50 people that want to do a game. Cool. We're going to break you up into groups of five or six. And you're all going to play in the same universe. And you're all going to get to come together afterwards and talk about what you affected. So he's like, oh, I was in the sewers because of the rap. I was like, oh my gosh, we heard the wizard talking about that. And so all the GMs get together and they write a story that overlaps. So everyone can come together afterwards and talk about their story and see how they connect.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I can imagine in that scenario, like one of the player characters decides to run away for some inexplicable reason, actually gets picked up by another table.
Yeah, right. They sometimes like when we can mix it, you know, we have a handful of corporate companies that, you know, it's every month they like to play. And so, you know, they really like the idea that these stories are interconnected. So it's kind of like, you know, some people are going for the Riders of Rohan. Some people are trying to go to Mount Doom, but they're all playing the same story.
Yeah, that is awesome.
This is outrageous. Where are the dice goblins who come in to take the bad dice away? Where are they? This kind of behavior is never tolerated in Barovia. You roll like that, they put you in dice jail right away. No rerolls, no nothing. Dice apps? We have a special jail for dice apps. You roll a one, right to dice jail. You roll off the table, right to dice jail, right away. Roll too high, dice jail. Too low, dice jail. You bounce out of the dice tray, you are right to dice jail. You roll too many 20s, believe it or not, dice jail. You don't roll 20s, also jail. 20s, no 20s. Player rolls a critical hit and there aren't enough dice, believe it or not, dice jail, right away. We have the best dice in the world because of dice jail. Do you want to have the best dice in the world? Get a dice jail from rpgvod.net/easyrollerdice.
I feel like this makes me want to ask like a bigger question. I'm a person at home listening to this, and I'm thinking maybe getting a pro diem for my friends is a good idea. How would you suggest somebody make that decision?
I would actually say, you know, even more so, there's probably people out there that don't have the group because the schedule doesn't line up, or like, you know, they've moved away, or like, you know, that's like a big thing is a lot of people don't have the group anymore. That's one of the great reasons to join a pro GMs game, because, you know, on our site, we have, you know, open slots so people can just like join with others. But the thing is, we notice that these people end up becoming like really fast friends, because if you want to become friends with someone, you play D&D with them. Because again, like our minds are tricked into that we've experienced these things because we're using our imagination. So you're like, oh, this is Jeff. We kill 1,000 spiders together. We're pretty good friends, you know? And then we're hearing these stories about players go to each other's weddings. And, you know, we hear about like the, you know, these kind of gift exchanges that are happening. So these really strong relationships are formed in these kind of games in these micro communities. And, you know, if you already have a group of friends, you're looking for a GM. Yeah, it's convenience. You also don't want to have to do it. You want to bring someone in that will just take care of everything for you. And you want to focus on the phone with your friends. And sometimes we have a week and like, oh, I need to like run this game. And then it becomes a burden. And the fun shouldn't be a burden. And if we can facilitate fun and you not feel burdened, then great.
Now, coming at this from a player perspective, let's say I'm in a group who's going to be using a professional DM for the first time. How does that change how the game feels from the player side?
So here's the thing. What I've noticed is because we you know, on our website, we allow people to run free games as well. The attendance rate of free games is very low.
Really?
Interesting.
When money's on the line, people are like, yeah, I'm paying for this because I want to play the game. And a lot of times people like say they want to join a D&D group with friends because they just like the people. And they're not interested in the game, and they're usually the ones that are also like, ah, I got something else I kind of got to do tonight, and they're gonna bail. And then the group feels like, well, you know, they feel the flakiness isn't healthy for the group sometimes. I'm like, well, you know, Greg's never here. And then people get frustrated. So you see a lot of buy-in when people end up joining like a pro game, because they're all there for the same reason. They want to have a great experience. It's very much like when you go to the movies. Everyone's at that movie because they want to see it. They're really excited for that, you know. And you do have every now and again like a few folks that like cause, you know, disturbance, whatever. But, you know, when you get together with all these people and you're like, we are so into this. We are so ready. Let's slay some freaking ghouls. And let's, you know, like become friends with a shambling mound. And we see a really high buy-in from that, you know?
That makes a lot of sense.
And like to follow the analogy, you know, when I set up a projector and a sheet in my backyard and invite the neighborhood to watch, you know, some, you know, a bootleg copy of Shaft and nobody shows up, maybe that's why. Maybe the movie theater experience is really what people are craving.
I think it's also part of it is that when you're paying for an experience, there's the true or not the expectation of quality. That if you're doing a free game, then it's like, well, this guy could just be an amateur and not know what he's doing. But if you're paying someone, it's like, I'm paying this guy, so he clearly has a skill set that is worth paying for, so I'm going to attend the game. And yeah, it is part of the money on the line thing, but I think it's also that expectation of people think that something that is paid for is of higher quality.
Yeah, and you know, if you're being paid for it, you're usually going to set aside time to make it great. If you're not doing it and you end up with no time to prep that week, no time to think about it, you know, like you, something else is going to sacrifice first, usually before you can, you know, I mean, yeah, as much as we like love this hobby, but you know, sometimes like life does get in the way. And if you can say like, no, I, this time I'm being paid for this, I have to set aside this time to prep, you do get that experience.
Now, since you're probably playing with a dungeon master who you might not be familiar with, you probably don't have that personal rapport. Is there ever a risk that the game turns adversarial? Like, has a paid DM ever gone off the rails and just been like, okay, we're playing Tomb of Horrors now. Everybody get a new character sheet.
Well, and I can actually...
Oh, good. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I can 100% imagine that, especially with newer players, because I think veterans understand that we're a team and we're working together, but the newer players... sometimes we think it's like, well, yeah, if you're running the game, then you're my enemy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, again, that kind of comes to onboarding, right? That comes to like how people are brought into the hobby and how people experience it. But our GMs are great at saying like, hey, here's the tools we use for the game. Here's the safety tools. Like, what do you not want mentioned? Here's some lines and veils, or here's an X card in case things get too intense. And they also say like, I'm going to facilitate this adventure for you. And they also have expectations like, hey, you know, we're all here to have fun. And I thought when I started this that people were going to be very demanding, like, listen, I'm paying you, so I should get a really dope sword. And then we realized that people that are brand new don't have preconceived notions of what they of like this kind of expectation or demand. And veterans are like, no, I don't want to pay to win. I want to win to win, you know? And so not as much as I thought there would be of this like kind of entitlement because of being paid. You know, people are just, but they are entitled to a great experience. And that doesn't mean that they have to be given everything. That just means they have to have fun.
Jumping off of that, sometimes I know that a lot of emotions can go into D&D, and especially with a group like of complete strangers, emotions can run high. Would you say that part of a DM's job is to act, paid DM's job is to act as mediator and suss out like what is working for the group and what isn't, and sort of come to compromises and stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of our GMs, they're very clear, you know, in their game listings of like, hey, this is what the game's like, this is what to expect. And so they draw the right players into their games because they say like, hey, we're going to have a game. It's going to be this. These are the content warnings. This is the kind of play that I use. And this is what the other players are like. And then, you know, usually during play, that's why you have things like, you know, the X card, the N card, or you have expectations that you talk about ahead of time, you know, like a social contract of sorts that this is what's allowed, this isn't what isn't. And then sometimes on the rare occasion that there is a bad fit, you know, players usually self-regulate. They usually say, you know what, this isn't the right GM for me, or this isn't the right group for me. And then, you know, they go and they find that. So I think the big thing is the more we explore this market and the more we kind of explore this kind of this whole industry, is people are matchmaking themselves because they know what they want, and GMs are kind of facilitating making sure that everyone feels welcome. That's such a political answer. That's such like a politician, like, yeah, oh, you know, everyone, you know, but it's true. You know, GMs really regulate things, and so do players.
Yeah. It was a good answer, I think.
It was a good answer.
I think you nailed it. I think everybody at home's feeling pretty comfortable right now.
Not all politics have to be bad.
Yeah. It's a politician's answer being, it's like, yeah, no, that was exactly what I needed you to say, and I'm glad that you said it to me. Yeah. All right. So I'm a person at home, and I'm thinking, like, I could do that. Like, I'm the regular game master. All of my friends say that I'm their favorite game master, mainly because I'm their only game master. And you know, I want to give this a go. I want to get out there and see if, you know, are these people just being nice to me because they're my friends, mm-hmm. or do I actually run a good game?
I've never had players be nice to me. No, fair. I'm kidding. No. I can relate to that
so hard.
My table is just a series of roasts. We just roast each other. You'd think that we were siblings by how mean we are to each other. And like, these people were at my wedding. Oh my gosh. Okay.
It's a back table though, right?
Yeah. they were my groom's folk. Okay. You know, but yeah, so I'm sorry, what was the question?
It doesn't really matter. No, I'm a person at home and I'm thinking like, this sounds awesome. I want to be part of it. I want to try to run a pro game.
Before we came along, it was a lot harder to be a pro GM because you had to have a website, you had to have an outreach program, and you had to start building everything up and you had to attract clients. And the thing is, there's not as many clients out there for groups, right? So there's not as many groups looking for a GM, but there are a lot of individual people looking for a GM. So that's one of the big things that we solved. So, you know, if you wanted to become a GM, the first step is you got to join Start Playing. You got to sign up for an account and you got to sign up to become a GM. But we have a whole onboarding where we walk you through what players kind of expect, what's some great data points on how to run your games, all the tools that we have available and how you can use those to ramp up as a GM. And then we have a huge Discord that's just all the pro GMs on our website, and they're constantly trading information and working with each other and trying to build each other up. So there's, you know, and there's other resources out there outside of us. I don't know any of them off the top of my head, but it is possible. And the main thing is everyone's hesitant to start because they're like, well, what if I'm not great enough? Okay. What if you aren't? What'd you lose? You know, there's nothing to lose. If this is something you like, we have people that do this because they just want to be able to help pay their crippling miniatures, you know, debt, you know, yeah, they're like, I need there. More miniatures, not to paint. You know,
they're publishing 3 books a year. I got to run a couple of these sessions just to get them.
Exactly. So, you know, we got some people that are very casual about it, and that's, you know, that, and they're completely content with that. They run one game a week. We got other people who are now running 8 to 10 games a week. Whoa. And they're full time.
That's awesome. I got to say, though, like, you're talking about what do you have to lose. So my fear is I'm thinking about it a little bit, right? But if I went to Start Playing and I got logged in, I got signed up and I went to be a GM and I got to that first situation where somebody's like, you know, hey, we're going to do some underwater combat. And I'm sitting there as a game master. I'm not prepared for this. I don't know what to do. That basically that I would disappoint Start Playing.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the big thing is you need to be clear with your players. Be like, hey, listen, I've been GMing for this long, and this is kind of the type of games I like to run. And, you know, if you are not ready to run underwater rules, then maybe you're the GM that's like, hey, listen, I'm not super rules heavy. You know, me, yeah. I tell everyone, like, listen, I'm going to make up half these rules. If I don't like this rule, I'm going to make it something different. I'm going to pull in 7 different rules from other game systems, too. You know, I'm going to be like Jazz when it comes to rules. That's so nerdy. Oh, my goodness.
It's good.
So, you know, but people know that. And then when it goes to play and I say, like, okay, you know what? We're going to use the clock mechanic from Blades in the Dark. Let's do this. And everyone's like, oh, but they like that. They like the fact that I'm just throwing, you know, this free form type of tabletop RPG at them. And other people are like, listen, I am raw. I am rules as written. All right. We will pause the game and I will look it up and we will talk and debate it. And there are some players that are like, yes, I love rules as written so much.
Oh, man. I'm the best raw. I'm imagining the listing for, like, hey, I want to get a group of rules lawyers together.
Yeah.
I want to play about 15 minutes of a game, and I want to spend the 3 hours after that arguing over the tiniest minutia that actually came up during that.
That's my ideal game. Yep.
Like the Law and Order D&D.
Exactly.
You know?
It's a corporate event for a law firm. It was great. They're going to love it. Hey, folks at home. It's Randall from the RPGBot.podcast, and today I want to talk to you about Described, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B. Describe is just like box text from your favorite adventure book, but it's designed to be read aloud in your own campaign. Free your creative energy and time for all other aspects of planning and running the perfect adventure, and stay ahead of your wayward party. In 2021, Discribe received an Innie Award for Best Online Content. Today, they have over 7,000 scenes, with dozens of new scenes coming on the average day. Currently, there's 9 collections of scenes: places, monsters, spells, cartographer, characters, items, planes, dialogue, and Enchanter Academy, and others are planned in the future. The scenes are set in the world of epic fantasy, like many of your favorite RPGs. If you are ready to have professional authors help you write your next adventure, visit dscribe.com/rpgbot. That's dscryb.com/rpgbot. Use the code RPGBOT at checkout to get 10% off your first subscription payment.
Yeah, exactly. So building off that, it sounds like there's a space for both players and DMs who prefer more homebrews type of systems, and players who just want to stick to the books that have been released, and no homebrew, no supplementary materials sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, what I noticed is a lot of GMs like, you can send me the homebrew and I'll tell you if it's okay or not. You know, cause it's kind of every GM that you never want to say no to everything. You always kind of like, okay, you're like, whoa, no, this is broken as all heck. you know, there's a lot of people who run, you know, just all homebrew. Like I only run homebrew. When I used to run all the time, I'd only run homebrew. But there's also a ton of people like, listen, I run Curse of Strahd. That's all I run. I run Curse of Strahd on the high seas. It's a pirate Curse of Strahd. The blue collar GM does that. I believe It's Friday, another one of our GMs. They run Curse of Strahd, but it's Strahd's a she, and there's this whole other part of like how Strahd has been changed. There's just so many variations on like, this is published, but we're going to change it up so it's completely new, or I'm going to run the book as it was written. So there's a lot of variation to be had.
That's really cool. You mentioned that you originally started doing this around a day job.
Yeah.
So this was a side hustle. Is it still a side hustle, or are you running this thing full time at this point?
Oh, so listen, this is actually a great segue. Look, can I tell you about the inception of this beautiful thing we call Start Playing?
Sure.
That will lead you to an answer to this question. It was March 17th, one day before the lockdown in San Francisco because of the pandemic. I get a phone call from my now co-founder, Nate. He's like, I would like to hire you as a game master. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Now, Nate was going through Y Combinator, which was a startup accelerator. And the product he was building, he was not crazy about. And he had in his head like, well, it would be really cool if I could do something to like maybe like find game masters and to hire a game master. He's like, it's probably not a good idea though. Who would want that? But still in the back of his head, he had it. I had just been collecting emails from other game masters because I was featured in Bloomberg. And so game masters would email me all the time, be like, hey, how can I do this? I'm like, I don't know yet, but give me your email and I'm gonna start a newsletter and I'm gonna start coming up with ideas. So I had 700 GMs on this newsletter. And so then Nate called me, he's like, hey, I would like to hire you as a game master. Like, oh yeah, okay. And then he started asking me product questions. Now I'm a product designer by day. And I was like, what are you building? He's like, oh, I'm not building anything, but I just thought, you know, a website like an Airbnb for game masters. And I was like, wait, I've been trying to build and we both were on that phone call for 6 hours that night, just talking about what that company could be. And the next day we decided that he was going to pivot his accelerator program to Start Playing. And I was going to freelance with him. And then a week later, he's like, will you actually be my co-founder? And I was like, yes, absolutely. You know, it was very sweet. I was like, yes, of course I'll be your co-founder. And then come November, I'm quitting my day job and we're out now doing this full time. Fast forward 2 years later, we've just closed a seed round with one of the largest VCs in the country, one of the most renowned A16. We're all doing this full time. We now have a team of 6. Our GMs have made over $3 million running games on our platform.
Whoa.
Wow.
And all from that one phone call.
Okay.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I can imagine going into the meeting to like do the pitch and being worried, like, they're not even going to know what tabletop gaming is. Like, I'm panicking. And then you walk in and all the VCs are wearing, like, classic D&D shirts. They're like, please tell me more. It's like, we were there when the rules were written, you know?
Do not quote the deep magic to me, witch.
Hey, congratulations. That Thank is you. Amazing. Cool. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's truly a dream, and it's wild because, you know, A16 has a huge games fund, and they're very in tune. They, you know, they actually wrote a white paper about tabletop like a month after we launched, and they even mentioned us in it. But they're talking about, like, listen, D&D tabletop, that's the next big thing, folks. Okay, focus on it. And everyone's like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then, like, 2 years later, they're like, yes, we'd like to invest in you. It was like, wow, okay, this is amazing.
We would like that you like that you want to invest in us, right? And you should do that.
Yes,
please. Shake hands. Can we do it?
Right. I mean, these are the ones that, you know, like, they're the first to invest in Instagram and, like, Airbnb and a bunch of other, like, just very well-known companies, and also great with marketplaces. So we feel very, very lucky to be with them.
Yeah. And also, okay, now we're stepping into, like, the nerdy tech talk. And everybody at home, come along. It's going to be great. Being connected with them and with the resources they had available, were you able to find, like, great people or great folks to talk to help accelerate how you're building your business?
Yeah. I mean, right now we're at that, like, you know, like, growing up stage where it's like, cool, now we need to, like, get the benefits set up. We need to get, like, you know, like, we're like, it's a lot of, like, HR, it's a lot of, like, that kind of growing up kind of stuff. But, you know, now, you know, we're able to, like, hire a bunch more people to really help build out the team to make things better for our game masters and to make things better for our players.
Awesome. 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 Okay. So I have one more question that I want to ask. We've talked about game mastering. We've talked a lot explicitly about D&D. What are some of the other popular games where there's regular GMs available?
Oh, my goodness. So it's always changing because it kind of depends on what game masters want to run. But, you know, the dropdown from the site, let's see what's going on right now. All right, let's see. Devin's going to take a look. A Song of Ice and Fire, RPG, Actung Cthulhu 2D20. All the D&Ds, advanced, basic, second edition, third, fourth, fifth. Wow, there's a fourth. Wow. Avatar Legends RPG, Blaze in the Dark, Call of Cthulhu, Carbon 2185. I mean, I'm skipping a bunch of them, but there's tons of different games being run right now, and different game systems.
Okay, wait. All right, I'm gonna put you on. Is there a Shadowrun on the list?
Let's see. Let's go ahead and we'll just type in Shadowrun.
And long-time listeners. Yeah. Okay, perfect.
There's two Shadowruns being run right now. Actually, if I go to Fool. Okay, so actually, there's two Shadowrun games that have open seats. There's 18 Shadowrun games that are full.
Nice. Wow. Okay. And long-term listeners will remember that Tyler and I still want to play Shadowrun sometime.
Yeah. Awesome. It's funny, if you ever go to our site, the thing is we remove full games from our site so you can never see them. Because it got to a point where people had to scroll through just, like, hordes of full games, which was just, like, such a rewarding feeling as a creator and as you know, like, you know, the papa of this.
Yeah, it's literally suffering from success.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a wonderful problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Exactly. Awesome. All right, well, Devin Chulik, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me. It was an absolute pleasure. I really appreciate it, y'all.
Do your social medias? Do you have anything, Discords, anything like that?
And if you'd like to, follow up on what we're doing at Start Playing, you can follow us on Twitter at Start Playing, and you can follow me on Twitter at Devin Chulik, DevonChulick. Thank you so much again for having me, y'all. Thank
Absolutely. You. And we will have links in the show notes. So, folks, if you want to find either Start Playing or Devin Chulik online, links in the show notes. Go see it. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcast and rate us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It's a quick, free way to support the podcast and helps us to reach new listeners. You can find links in the show notes. You'll find affiliate links for source books and other materials linked in the show notes, as well as on rpgbot.net. Following these links helps us to make this show happen every week. We did it, folks. We did a whole pod.
Woo!
We did it.
All right.
No, that was awesome. Thanks a lot.
That was a really good conversation.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop.
Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.